The topic of my talk this morning, as Ross has said, is the economics of prohibition and drug legalization. As most of you know, drug prohibition is, in the United States, is an extremely important policy, both symbolically and in its actual operation. To give you some rough parameters, in 1998, the federal government spent roughly $11 billion for the enforcement of drug prohibition. That's not including the money spent on treatment, education, and things like that. That's simply on interdiction. State and local governments spent about 2 to 3 times that much, so anywhere from $35 to $50 billion spent by all levels of government to criminalize the currently illegal drugs. In recent years, state, federal, and local authorities have made roughly 1.5 million arrests per year for enforcement of the drug laws, putting hundreds of thousands of people behind bars and leading to a U.S. prison population of roughly 2 million, the highest prison population per capita of any country in the world by a large margin. At the same time, the U.S. Treasury and the state and local treasuries have foregone tens of billions of dollars that they could have been collecting had drugs been legal rather than having been prohibited. Now, according to the standard wisdom, the standard view, all that effort is necessary and important to prevent drugs from becoming an even greater scourge on society than they already are. In particular, the standard position would argue that prohibition prevents even greater use and abuse of drugs than would otherwise occur. It argues that we reduce crime by reducing drug use via prohibition, that we save billions of dollars in health care costs that might result from increased drug use, that we improve the productivity of the workplace by preventing expanded use of drugs, and perhaps most importantly to many people, that policy takes a moral stand. It makes a moral statement by prohibiting drugs, that drug use is evil, it should not be tolerated by society. In my talk, I want to present a strongly opposing view. Namely, that drugs should be legal, and I mean all drugs, at least for the moment, rather than being prohibited, that policy would lead to only modest increases in drug use, and even some of the increased use that would occur is not necessarily a bad thing, not necessarily undesirable, that crime would probably decline substantially as the result of legalization rather than increase, that changes in healthcare costs, productivity effects, accident rates, and the like would be small and in certain cases might even be in a beneficial direction. The Treasury would, of course, benefit to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year by taxing drugs at standard rates. And, again, last but not least, from a moral perspective, legalization is far preferable than prohibition on a number of counts. What I want to argue first is that the effect of prohibition on either the demand or supply is not necessarily nearly as large as commonly assumed, and may, in fact, not even necessarily be in the right direction. One way in which prohibition might affect the demand for drugs is simply by making drugs illegal. But we know from lots of kinds of evidence that if you have a weakly enforced law, the legal status per se is very, very little deterrent for people to violate that law. Speeding laws, blue laws, many kinds of tax laws that are weakly enforced are routinely violated. The mere fact that something is illegal doesn't seem to deter very many people. A second way that prohibition might reduce demand for drugs is by actually punishing people for being in possession of or consuming drugs, locking you up and putting you in jail. And there are, as we've mentioned, 1.5 million arrests, of which roughly two-thirds are for possession of drugs every year. So that makes it seem like we, in fact, are punishing drug users to a substantial degree. But it turns out that although there are many, many arrests for drug possession, there are many, many, many more cases of people consuming drugs every year. Tens of millions of people report to the government every year that they have consumed various illegal substances, and the true number is probably larger for a variety of reasons. We also know from various sources that if you consume drugs, but you do so quietly, responsibly, without doing anything else dumb, without driving under the influence, without simultaneously committing shoplifting or theft or robbery or whatever, your chances of being arrested merely for buying drugs and consuming them in the privacy of your home are extraordinarily small. So it's again unlikely that prohibition is actually deterring drug use to any significant degree because it has almost no chance of really inflicting a substantial probability of a negative sanction on people who are simply consuming drugs. Even worse, the effect of prohibition might be to increase the demand for drugs to the extent it creates a forbidden fruit allure, which for some groups, such as teenagers, might be a significant factor. Okay? It's not clear that that's a big effect, but it's a potential effect that one ought to be concerned about and might be exacerbated by prohibition. All of this doesn't mean that prohibition fails to reduce the demand for drugs, but it suggests that the effect is probably fairly modest, and existing evidence would tend to back that up. On the supply side, prohibitions certainly add cost to supplying the drugs. The traffickers have to compensate their employees for the risk of going to jail, the risk of getting shot. They have to disguise the goods when they're brought in from other countries and things like that. So clearly costs on one side are going to be higher as a result of prohibition. At the same time, black market suppliers easily evade income taxes, excise taxes, OSHA regulation, environmental regulation, minimum wage laws, and millions of other cost-increasing policies that would exist and would be imposed on the suppliers if drugs were legal, and that provides a partial offset to the effects of prohibition. Indeed, there's considerable evidence, okay, that interdiction is not very effective at all in raising the price of drugs. In particular, over the past 20 years in the United States, all measures of drug and policy enforcement, the budget of the DEA, the number of arrests, the amount of assets seized, and things like that, all have gone up astronomically, especially in the 80s, to a lesser degree in the 90s. Okay? Over that same period, from roughly 1980 to the present, real purity-adjusted drug prices have fallen dramatically to something like 20% of what they were in 1980. If interdiction is effective in adding costs and raising prices, okay, it's not showing up at all in the available data. So again, prohibition may play some role on the supply side in raising prices and reducing consumption, but the magnitude of that effect does not appear to be very significant at all. So my view, my assessment of both theory and evidence, is that the critical effect of prohibition, okay, is not, okay, in reducing the demand or supply of drugs and thereby reducing consumption. The most important effect is to move the market underground, which has a number of very significant consequences. First of all, by creating a black market, prohibition causes increased violence and other types of crime. The prohibitionists, the people who advocate prohibition, routinely argue that drug use causes violence, but there's in fact very little evidence to substantiate that view with respect to virtually all drugs, possible exception of alcohol and maybe for cocaine, but even that is not clear. In fact, the more plausible hypothesis is that by forcing the trade into the black market and making it difficult for suppliers to sue each other with lawyers to resolve their disputes using legal dispute resolution mechanisms, prohibition increases violence because black market suppliers are going to shoot each other to resolve disputes, okay, rather than going to court. My own work on this subject suggests that the murder rate in the United States is roughly 25 to 50% higher than it would be in the absence of drug prohibition. Okay? That particular number is, of course, subject to many caveats, but clearly the evidence fails to make any case that prohibition has effectively reduced violence. Similarly, other types of crime are likely to be higher, in particular income-generating crime such as theft, prostitution, shoplifting, and the like, to the extent that prohibition is successful in raising prices, because the higher prices force drug users to pay those elevated prices, and in some cases that means they'll engage in more crime in order to support their consumption of drugs. By creating a black market, prohibition also redistributes tens of billions of dollars every year to criminals. In a legal market, the revenues are taxed. Those taxes go to the government for other tax reduction or for other expenditure. In a black market, it's the segment of society that is most willing to violate society's laws that is enriched at the expense of everyone else by earning those revenues that would otherwise show up as taxes. In a prohibited market, you're likely to see more accidental overdoses and poisonings related to drugs because quality control is much worse in a black market than in a legal market. You can't sue a seller of crack cocaine for having given you a low-quality dose of crack. Similarly, in a black market, we're likely to see far more corruption with the politicians, police, judges, and the like than you would in a legal market because the mechanisms by which the participants in the market can lobby Congress, can argue for their cases in courts and things like that are obviously eliminated and they have to use other methods of persuasion. All of these effects are likely to occur whether or not prohibition in fact reduces consumption to some degree, and in my assessment, these effects of prohibition are far better documented and far more robust than the effect of prohibition in reducing consumption of drugs. Beyond these consequences, prohibition has a number of other effects which I lump under the category of making other policies complicated. Okay? For example, because of our desire to enforce prohibition, we think about shifting police resources away from deterring homicide, murder, rape, auto theft, and the like toward the enforcement of drug prohibition, which may lead to more other kinds of crime. Because of the desire to enforce prohibition, we consider using very aggressive police tactics such as racial profiling, asset seizures, breaking down doors in the middle of the night, and things like that, tactics which would never be considered or considered only rarely if you didn't need to enforce the drug laws. Because of prohibition, many states prohibit the sale of clean syringes, which potentially increases the use of dirty needles to inject drugs and therefore the spread of HIV. Because we want to enforce prohibition and want to look tough, marijuana is classified as being one of the most dangerous drugs in the country, more dangerous than morphine or cocaine, even though there's abundant evidence that marijuana can be effective as medicine. Similarly, because of the desire to enforce prohibition, foreign policy decisions, immigration policy decisions, trade negotiations are all tied up with with drug policy rather than being able to be made on their merits. So to summarize the descriptive or the positive analysis of drug prohibition, it's clear that prohibition may reduce consumption of drugs to some degree, but that's not clear and the evidence doesn't suggest a very big effect. What is clear is that prohibition has many, many other effects, and those need to be accounted for in the welfare or normative analysis of prohibition. So that's what I want to turn to in the second half of the talk. Given my description of what happens as a result of prohibition, I want to talk about whether prohibition is a better policy than the alternative of legalization or some others that we'll discuss a little bit. In economist language, that means doing a normative or welfare analysis instead of a positive or descriptive analysis. Now, what should be clear without further discussion is that virtually all the effects of prohibition I've mentioned are undesirable. There could be disagreement about whether the magnitudes that I've discussed are accurate. Perhaps the murder rate is only 10% higher, not 50% higher. Okay? There could be, in a few cases, some disagreement about whether I have the analysis exactly right. Perhaps there are some places where I'm mistaken and prohibition has a different type of effect than what I said. There's certainly room for reasonable people, scientific people, to disagree. But what's clear is that if you accept the analysis, almost everything I've talked about is a negative consequence of prohibition, from the increased crime to the transfers to criminals, spread of HIV, the complicating of policymaking in other areas, and the list goes on and on. Thus, it's clear that there's at least some presumption against prohibition, since it unquestionably has a large number of highly undesirable consequences. The obvious exception to that statement, the issue which clearly needs the discussion, is the effect of prohibition on the consumption of drugs. I've suggested that effect might not be large, but I don't want to assert that it's zero. Okay? Clearly the evidence is consistent with there being an effect of prohibition in reducing consumption, and possibly it's a moderately large effect, although that seems unlikely given the evidence. Okay? What's clear is that that's the key question. If you knew that there were no effect of prohibition on consumption of drugs, and prohibition had all these other negative effects, then the policy analysis is a no-brainer. All the effects are negative. If you believe that prohibition has a big effect in reducing the consumption of drugs, then the policy question is harder. Then you have to take a stand on whether you think policy should attempt to reduce drug consumption, and that will have to be weighed against all the other consequences of prohibition. So what I want to do is present four different perspectives on drug consumption and how policy should attempt to address drug consumption that are useful for thinking about the issue. And different people will have different degrees of sympathy with various perspectives, but I want to lay out what I think are the four important perspectives to consider. The first one is I'll call the rational economist perspective. That says people consume drugs because they choose to consume drugs, because they think it makes them better off, because they think that they get some enjoyment or some benefit from it. And it shouldn't matter to policymakers whether people consume drugs to become intoxicated, to self-medicate, to look cool, or anything else. That's their choice. Okay? Similarly, it doesn't matter from this particular perspective whether drugs are addictive or whether they can have negative consequences, which clearly they can. If rational people who are fully informed choose to accept the risk associated with drug use under this perspective, they must be doing it because they think that makes them better off, and that's their decision. Now, if you accept that view, okay, just for the sake of argument for the moment, then it's clear again that the policy analysis of prohibition is trivial. Then all of the effects a prohibition are undesirable because reducing people's drug consumption is a bad thing, not a good thing, just as reducing the consumption of alcohol by people who can use it responsibly would be a bad thing, not a good thing. Now, I'll argue in just a second that you don't need to accept the rational economist perspective to accept the bottom line of my analysis. Okay? My bottom line doesn't rely on everybody being a fully rational, forward-looking person who can rationally calculate all the costs and benefits of drug use and make the correct decision. Okay? I think it's important to note, however, that at least some drug use clearly does fit that perspective. Okay? And a fair-minded evaluation of drug prohibition should recognize as one of the costs that some people who could use drugs responsibly, okay, do so without harming themselves to a significant degree and without harming others to a significant degree, are prevented or discouraged from using drugs, okay, under current policy. And indeed, the view that we tolerate people's use of a whole range of things, okay, as long as they don't use them irresponsibly, and we only try to punish the irresponsible use of those substances, well, that's the approach that we take to the legal status of alcohol, cigarettes, downhill skiing, Ben and Jerry's ice cream, automobiles, and myriad other products. And therefore, for at least perhaps just for consistency, we ought to think about the same perspective with respect to drugs. So that's one possible perspective. Now, clearly, lots of people don't buy into that, or at least don't buy into it fully. What's an alternative way to think about public policy and drugs? A first alternative I'll refer to is paternalism. It says that people either have imperfect information, or they're not smart enough, or grown up enough, or mature enough to process the information carefully, and that we need to keep them preventing drugs to help them help themselves, to prevent them from harming themselves. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, let me say very clearly, I don't like the paternalism argument, not because I believe there's no myopia or irrationality or stupidity out there in the world. Obviously, there is. I don't like it because, personally, I think that once you introduce that into the analysis, it gives the government the right to intervene in almost any decision in people's lives, and I would regard that as undesirable. But more importantly, I want to argue that even if you believe that there's lots of irrationality in people's decisions about drug use, and even if you think the government should be paternalistic, okay, or open to the notion it should be paternalistic, that doesn't justify prohibition in the case of drugs. First, despite the media scare stories, the degree of addictiveness, the degree of negative effects on health or productivity or anything else from drugs is routinely grossly exaggerated. It's not to say that drugs can't do serious harm. Clearly they can. But the distribution of consequences, the degree to which people have very bad outcomes as opposed to okay outcomes or enjoyable outcomes, the likelihood that people are going to become addicted, the likelihood that they're going to suffer adverse health consequences, are far smaller than is typically portrayed and is much more similar to what we observe for something like alcohol. A relatively small fraction has relatively big problems, but a large fraction of the population that uses the alcohol or illegal drugs manage to do so with relatively little consequence. Still further, even granting the premises a paternalistic perspective, prohibition seems the least likely policy to deter drug use by those who are most likely to be myopic or those who are most likely to be irrational. In particular, if you think about teenagers, they're a lot likely to be concerned about the legal status of the drug. If anything, prohibition might glamorize drug use and encourage teenagers or other people who are not particularly thoughtful in their decision to experiment with drugs and things like that, thereby exacerbating the effects of their myopia or their irrationality, harming the people that prohibition is deliberately meant to protect. So the perspective I want to push is that even if paternalism is something that you want to accept, it is very unlikely to suggest drug prohibition is the appropriate policy. More plausibly, it suggests a far less draconian approach, subsidized drug treatment, public health campaigns, sin taxes, or other approaches in dealing with the negatives of drug use. Those would not create black markets and therefore would get you a better balancing of costs and benefits than the policy of prohibition. Still a third perspective on drug consumption and drug policy is what economists refer to as externalities. Sometimes one person's drug use can negatively affect other parties. So even if you don't like paternalism, you still might want to reduce drug consumption relative to what otherwise would occur because people can drive under the influence of drugs, they can use drugs in the workplace and cause accidents, they may use drugs during pregnancy and harm an unborn child and things like that. As with the paternalism view, it's important to note that the magnitude of the negative externalities is frequently grotesquely exaggerated. To give an example, the crack baby scare of roughly 10 years ago or 12 years ago suggested that there were hundreds of thousands of children being born every year who were severely affected by the negative consequences of their mother's crack use. In fact, the study which was used to justify that number was based on an extraordinarily selective set of hospitals, okay, that had a very, very, very biased population. A later study used a more representative, nationally representative set of hospitals and found a far, far smaller number. It also turned out that the early studies had sloppily confused drug-affected, cocaine-affected versus cocaine-exposed. There were indeed many kids who had been exposed to cocaine in utero, but very, very few of them showed any evidence whatsoever of having been affected by that drug use. Moreover, subsequent studies, 5-10 years later, that have followed the kids born who did appear to be crack affected when they were born, have found that those effects were mainly persistent, and in particular, it was hard to show much effect, if any, of the crack cocaine use relative to all the other negative things which were typically associated with kids who were born crack affected. Low parental income, lack of prenatal care, severe alcohol use during pregnancy, and many other things. So this is not to say crack use during pregnancy is a good thing. It's almost certainly not. Okay? But the view that it's a horrible thing and that it was affecting hundreds of thousands of children, okay, is just a grotesque exaggeration. And that should be kept in mind in trying to think about the externality argument. It also turns out that calculating which goods or which policies cause externalities is a very tricky thing. One of the standard externalities that people refer to is that if someone does something which requires greater use of the healthcare system, and that healthcare system is partially publicly funded, you might be having a negative externality by making greater use of Medicaid or Medicare. Well, there's a whole set of papers which have showed fairly convincingly that in the case of cigarettes, although they make you less healthy, are in fact saving the government money, because people who smoke cigarettes on average are dying young and not collecting their Social Security or their Medicare. Now, I don't think anyone, any economist, would use that type of reasoning to say, gee, maybe we should be subsidizing cigarette consumption to save the government some tax revenue. Okay, clearly no. But if you're going to argue the externality perspective, okay, you need to be sort of internally consistent and intellectually honest about it, and it's not clear that it justifies reducing of consumption of drugs, all things taken into account. It's also problematic to do that calculation and to figure out the effects of externalities because repeal of prohibition, legalization, might induce substitution from one substance to another, okay, with relatively little change in the externalities. For example, marijuana has been well documented to have smaller negative effects on one's driving ability than alcohol. People on the influence of marijuana don't drive as well as they do without marijuana, but they tend to become less aggressive and drive more slowly, so the effects are not horrible, whereas the effects of alcohol seem to be to make people more aggressive when they're driving. Okay? So if repeal of prohibition led to a substitution from alcohol to marijuana, okay, that might lead to a reduction in externalities, okay, and therefore be on net a good thing, not a bad thing. Finally, again, even accepting that drug use does cause some externalities, which it clearly does in some instances, and that these are sufficiently great to merit a public policy response, it's again clear that there are alternative policies which might achieve some reduction in those externalities with a far better balancing of all the costs and benefits. In particular, a sin tax, a moderate sin tax, one which does not itself generate a black market, okay, would raise the price of drugs to a significant degree, reduce consumption and therefore associated externalities, but not generate the black market and all the other negative consequences of that that I've discussed. So as with paternalism, there may be a justification for intervening in the drug market. It's clearly not a justification for prohibition. A final possible perspective on drug consumption and public policy is that drug use is simply evil or immoral, and policy should prohibit drugs to show its disapproval, even if that policy has drastic, undesirable auxiliary consequences. Now, that view is, in some ways, the most logically consistent of all the perspectives. If you believe that the only policy that takes a sufficiently strong moral stand against drugs is prohibition, well, then you should support prohibition. Nevertheless, unless you put infinite weight on making that moral statement, proponents of that view should recognize the existence of all these other effects and that they have moral implications as well. To take the most obvious examples, my analysis suggests that a result of drug prohibition, society experiences increased violence, some of which affects innocent bystanders. It suggests that more children are born HIV positive because of the restrictions on clean syringes. It suggests that people are generally less well protected in their homes by the police because the police are focused on enforcing drug laws, and several other issues. All of those are morally reprehensible consequences of prohibition, and therefore prohibition doesn't hold the moral high ground. More broadly, my view is that prohibition severely undermines respect for the law by attempting to enforce a policy which is clearly honored more in the breach than in the observance, teaching people that laws are for suckers. You might as well violate the laws that you don't like because your next-door neighbor is getting away with violating the laws that he doesn't like. And prohibition takes the position of blaming an inanimate object, the drugs, for actions which are arguably due to the behavior of people, thus suggesting the avoidance of individual responsibility. Both of those would widely be regarded as morally undesirable by precisely many of the people who want to take a moral stand against drugs. So nothing in the economic analysis is going to convince people for whom any and all drug use is utterly abhorrent. But if you recognize any degree of trade-off between taking a moral stand and all the other consequences of drug use, then you ought to be willing to consider the arguments I've made here and possibly to come to those conclusions. So my bottom line on the normative analysis of drug prohibition, on whether it's a good policy, is simple. First, virtually all of the effects are undesirable, with the only possible exception being any reduction in drug consumption achieved by prohibition. And even that is at least partly a cost, not a benefit of prohibition. Second, if one believes that policy should attempt to reduce drug use relative to what would otherwise occur, prohibition is almost certainly the worst policy for achieving that end, unless you put truly enormous weight on making a moral statement by adopting that policy. So let me wrap up. The key message has been that if we need an intervention with respect to drugs, there are other policies that are better than prohibition. I want to conclude by emphasizing that this is not necessarily an endorsement of those other policies, such as subsidized treatment, public health campaigns, sin taxes, age restrictions, and the like. At a minimum, intellectual honesty suggests that those policies need their own cost-benefit analysis as well. And in my view, there are a number of reasons to be cautious about whether those policies are action improvement over simply legalizing drugs and treating them like all their goods. To give you an example, take the case of public health campaigns. First of all, it's pretty clear that they have no effect on anyone's behavior, based on large numbers of studies, but they cost money. So that's a negative of that policy. More importantly, many of the public health campaigns that are run by the government are so excessive, this is your brain on drugs, and things like that, that kids, to whom they're presumably addressed, know that they're idiotic. They know that most of their friends are using drugs, and they're not having anything, the drugs are not having anything like that kind of consequence in most cases. And so they realize that they should stop paying attention to anything that grown-ups say, because grown-ups just lie to them all the time. Similarly, with age restrictions, it's clearly reasonable that you would want to restrict sales of crack cocaine to 16-year-olds or 18-year-olds or whatever. But what seems to happen is, first, that parents use the existence of age restrictions as an excuse to avoid the responsibility of watching what their kids were doing and monitoring their behavior. And as with the public health campaigns, the age restrictions get expanded to a point, such as the 21-year-old drinking age, where they're clearly not being obeyed by anyone, and that again makes a mockery of the law and teaches everyone that these policies are just for suckers. So my view is that legalizing and adding some of these other policies, having a sin tax, having age restrictions, etc., but legalizing drugs, would clearly be an enormous improvement over the current policy of prohibition. But my own suspicion is that treating drugs like all other commodities is actually the best that we can do. That's not something that I've analyzed very carefully as what I've said today. It's mainly my hunch based on general principles and a more preliminary analysis of the issue. What I do suggest with great confidence is that current policy is almost certainly the worst of all possible worlds, and thoughtful consideration of legalization in all its varieties can't happen too soon. Thank you very much.